Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
What on earth is going on? Iran are the best, then they're the worst, then they're the best and the worst, both at the same time. We're bombing them, but they're just friends, and it's a love tap, but is it? I don't know. Maybe Shabbos Kestenbaum does. He's a writer, he's a commentator. He is honestly one of my favorite people on social media because he just says, well, maybe because he says what I'm thinking, he just says it faster. Shabbos Kestenbaum, good morning or good evening. How are you?
Hey, good evening from Los Angeles. Good to be with you.
Nice to be with you. And as always, thank you for staying up to chat to us. Okay, maybe you can help us figure out what is going on. At the same time, the Donald Trump is in the area and selling aircrafts to Turkey. Iran, Turkey's friend, is bombing ships. America is now hitting back. They are scum, but then they're not. Please help us.
Sure. So the Iran stuff is less complicated. So we know from U.S. Central Command that in the last few hours, there has been really a dramatic wave of U.S. strikes against Iran in response to Iran breaking the MOU. They had broken it at least four separate times. And so this strike included over 100 military targets. It included military infrastructure. It included missile and drone storage sites. It included air defense systems. It included coastal defense surveillance installations. It included naval targets. So pretty significant. Now, why were these U.S. strikes necessary? Well, as I kind of mentioned, the fundamental premise or agreement of the MOU was that Iran would not attack commercial ships in the Strait of Hormuz. That was kind of the basis by which Trump was incentivized to create this MOU to begin with. And as I think I mentioned last time on your show, one of the problems with negotiating with Islamic fundamentalists is you're dealing with Islamic fundamentalists. These are people who you cannot trust, both on political levels and also on religious levels. So Iran did, in fact, attack shipping lanes in the Strait of Hormuz, and President Trump felt that he had to respond. I can cast aspersions or surmise why it is he felt he had to respond this time and not the other three previous violations of the MOU. But point being, the president has made it clear that these were limited targeted operations, sort of to force Iran back into the agreement. The president has made it clear he does not want to see this escalate into what it once was 3 months ago. But as I said, it's very, very difficult trying to negotiate with the Iranians because, in fact, they are the Iranians and they simply do not keep deals that they sign up to.
So one of the concerns that I've had, or one of the thoughts that I've had the whole way through, is if we think we know that because we're experts on reading the news, Donald Trump, with all of his intelligence in the region, Israeli intelligence, knows this more than we do. It cannot be that all of a sudden he was deluded and decided that this new Iranian crop of leaders are going to be any different to the last crop of Iranian leaders. So he was very clearly, and we spoke about this, following a strategy that is about more than simply that conflict. Iran's behavior seems to me to be taunting that. Is that a reasonable assumption, or is there something else at play? Because why indeed would Iran, who seems to be getting everything that they want, why would they put this at risk?
Well, on paper, at least, Iran would not be getting everything they want. So one of the foundational agreements to the MOU was that Iran would have to give up their enriched stockpiles, in particular the uranium. In fact, that was one of the reasons why the MOU took such a long time to come into fruition, because there was a whole big to-do about, you know, this sand that President Trump kept referring to this nuclear sand and the uranium and the enrichment. So that's number one. Number two, when it comes to President Trump himself, I believe I mentioned this last time, you and I have a political calculation that is far different than the president's calculation. Keep in mind that in the United States, we have our midterm elections in November, and that very much decides whether President Trump will be a lame duck president, essentially helpless for the last 2 years of his presidency, or if he can bring about the fruition of the MAGA agenda, things that he's been talking about for the better part of a decade, things like tariffs, things like mass deportations. And the only way you get that is by preserving and then hopefully expanding the Republican majority in the House and the Senate. And the American voter typically has a short attention span. So when they go to vote in November, they're probably probably not going to think about the Epstein files. They're probably not going to think about the economy. What they will think about is on the drive to the voting booths, they had to pay $5, $6, sometimes even $7 a gallon for gas. And again, we go by gallon, not liters. I think we go by liters. That's a lot of money. And President Trump was very open to the idea of regime change in the beginning. That's why they armed the Kurds. That's why they killed the Ayatollah. But it didn't work. And he gave the Kurds, he gave the Iranians the freedom to do it. It did not turn out that way. And President Trump came to the realization that he was faced with two bad options. Either you can continue this, make this war even more unpopular amongst the American people, or create some type of legal framework, which was this MOU, in the hopes that Iran keeps it, knowing full well Iran probably wouldn't keep it. Mm-hmm. And it's important to remember that even the Vice President, J.D. Vance, who is, I think, accurately called an isolationist, but probably more accurately a populist, he himself said this morning that he supports these strikes because it was very clear that the Iranians violated the MOU and the United States had to respond. But as I said, I'm quite doubtful that this will turn into a larger escalation. But it's true, your underlying question is true, that the Iranian leadership has not changed its goals, it's not changed its ideology, and the chance to kill America, the chance to kill Israel, are still what, you know, the majority of the Iranian public hear from their government each and every day.
What is the fact that Iran is attacking Bahrain, attacking Kuwait again? It means, and last time certainly the UAE was under threat, as was even Qatar. Doesn't that erode support for the United States in the region? And given the fact that Iran is never, or certainly not under this leadership, going to be a real partner to the U.S., doesn't President Trump place those relationships somewhat at risk?
Well, I think what you're describing, you know, the fact that Bahrain, Kuwait have been the targets of Iranian strikes the last few months kind of underscores what I would say are some of the ideological or just logical holes in the MOU, namely the fact that there was this expectation that those Gulf nations would invest to the tune of $300 billion into the Iranian economy. And you sort of have to pause and ask yourself, well, why would they do that if Iran is the one launching missiles into their sovereign territory each and every single day? So that's point number one. Point number two is while it's true that the Gulf nations are more let's say, hesitant to deal with President Trump, it's not like they have plentiful options here. I think that sort of underscores why the Abraham Accords are such a great success, because whether the UAE, for example, truly admires the Israeli spirit, Israeli ingenuity, it's almost irrelevant because there's an acknowledgement in the region that you're dealing with bad actors no matter which direction you look. And in a deal of Iran, Saudi Arabia, or Israel, some of the smarter Muslim-majority countries in the Middle East have realized that they would rather be on Team Israel, just from pragmatic reasons. It's financially more successful, economically, culturally. It's a country that you would want to hedge your bets on as opposed to Iran. And leaving aside the religious ideology and the Ayatollah, I mean, Iran's economy is virtually non-existent. I mean, they've been in a great recession for more than a decade now. So you're not going to see regional investments. You're not going to see regional peace with Iran because much like how Vladimir Putin's invasion in Ukraine very much backfired because even the pro-Russian or Russian-sympathetic Ukrainians in the Donetsk region now very much hate Vladimir Putin because he was the one lobbing missiles into their territory, you now feel and see a similar exchange with those Gulf nations who may have been more sympathetic to Iran, but ever since Iran started launching missiles into their sovereign territory, they're now questioning regional alliances to begin with.
Let's just shift a little bit, or very slightly, to Turkey, because this nation clearly is forming part of whatever this jigsaw puzzle is. Take me through the approach that Trump and his administration is now adopting with regard to Turkey and what they're hoping to achieve.
Yeah, so the U.S. is expected to send 6 F-35 fighter jets to Turkey, which would lift the previous ban. This is very much in response to the NATO summit that was just ended this week. And as I said, there has previously been a ban on selling any of the latest generation of American fighter jets. Now, President Trump is sort of balancing a couple of different regional goals here. It's first very important to keep in mind that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is against this deal. I mean, Turkey and Israel have historically had pretty poor relations, but it's quite poor right now. President Trump on an ideological, grandiose level. He likes to make deals. He likes to create alliances. He believes that within Erdogan, he has a counter, I would say, to someone like Prime Minister Netanyahu. He wants to create deals. He wants to preserve American military dominance and Western hegemony in an otherwise regressive region. And my observation is he's sort of shopping around for allies. And he believes he has found one in Erdogan. I would also caution your audience not to get too pessimistic, because this actually would require an act of Congress. And again, I'm obviously opposed to this, and especially because it's quite easy to reverse engineer and then sell the information to China or other U.S. adversaries.
And the comments that that Trump has pulled Turkey back from entering the war alongside Iran, any validity to that?
Yeah, I mean, I can speculate, but it's very unclear. I mean, what's been so fascinating the last 3-4 months with this war in Iran is sort of the anonymous reporting and the he said and she said.
Exactly.
So
right.
It's difficult. I mean, impossible. I'll put it this way. It wouldn't surprise me, but I haven't seen sources that can definitively validate those sentiments. So I can surmise that it's possible, but I would not be able to state that definitively. And look, you know, you have to give credit to Erdogan. He's quite smart. He's been pushing President Trump for a while now for this sale, despite the fact that he knows that President Trump is quite friendly with Prime Minister Netanyahu. We also know that Turkey is building defense ties with Moscow. It's using Moscow's S-400 air defense system. And look, President Trump he has praised Erdogan in the same way that he's praised strong men, authoritative men, people like Vladimir Putin, people like Kim Jong-un. He called him he literally called Erdogan a strong man. He says people don't mess with him. You know, he instills fears in his people. So President Trump is
sounds like a perfect democratic leader.
Male leadership.
Right, exactly. Absolutely fascinating. So just to summarize before I let you go, you think that your outlook would be that this scuffle will be fairly contained, and that the parties will try and move back to whatever this MOU is within the next few days?
Yes, I would say that. I don't see this breaking out into a regional conflict because neither side really wants it. And then just going back to Turkey, look, President Trump himself said that in order for this deal to go through, J.D. Vance would have to review it, Pete Hegseth would have to review it, Marco Rubio would have to review it to ensure that Turkey has indeed complied with U.S. laws to first receive F-35 fighter jets. And as I said, I'm very... I'm very doubtful that such a deal would go through, but, you know, making predictions in politics is a fool's errand. President Trump says many, many things. He also talked about Mar-a-Gaza, and those things never really panned out. So I always say that President Trump is an individual you should take seriously, but not necessarily literally. And I would imagine that this is one of those moments.
And that is where we leave it, Shabbos Kestenbaum. Thank you, as always. Now you can go off to bed. He is a writer, commentator, a religious American Jewish activist. And we speak to him as often as we possibly can to get an insight into what is happening in the United States.